Welcome to Cartoonist Kayfabe. My name is Jim Rugg.
I'm Ed Piskor.
Going to look at an interesting book here today, Ed. Batman Animated by Paul Dini and Chip Kidd. Before we dive into this classic, tell us about Red Room.
Red Room Issue 1, bona fide hit. Thanks to the Kayfabe audience. Thanks to you, Jim Rugg, with your variant cover. Thanks to Peach Momoko for her variant cover. We hit the print button, Jim. It's in the works, man. You hit the button one time on those big presses, and they pump out 5 comics in a second, so these things are going to be running for quite a long time, Jimmy. You could also pre-order issue 2 and 3 of Red Room so far. I just drew the cover for issue 4, so that'll be available for pre-order pretty quickly as well. Self-contained stories, horror on the dark web for fun and profit. Jim, they are live streaming murders for Bitcoin pledges to sick patrons, man. It makes me think of the kayfabe audience out there, man. Anyhow, hit the Patreon up if you want. Patreon.com/Ed Piskor if you want to read the comics ahead of time. But it's going to start coming out on a regular basis, monthly, in mid-May.
It's only like 2 weeks, Ed. It'll be here before we know
Pretty
it.
Pretty fun.
I wanted to highlight some of my books that are still in print, because I've had a bunch of stuff go out of print in the last year. So one of the books that you can still get is my Image Street Angel books. These are all still available wherever you buy comics. They're available on Amazon. If your store doesn't have them, they can order them. These books are the big oversized hardcovers. Most of the stories in the hardcovers are collected in Deadliest Girl Alive, also from Image Comics. But these are the Street Angels that are still available. So if you watch this channel and you want to keep up with what we do, this is some stuff that I started doing right before Cartoonist Kayfabe began. Some of the few books of mine that are still available in print and still available through comic shops. So Street Angel from Image Comics is where to go for all of these. And you can find out a lot more about these on my Patreon at patreon.com/Jim Rugg, where you can see behind the scenes lots of original art from how I put these things together, because that's the other piece that was going while these books were being created. Pretty good record of how I actually made these comics available if you join me on patreon.com/Jim Rugg.
Has to be reasonably surreal to have the Image eye on one of your comics.
Very exciting.
So kayfabers, if you did not hit the bell icon and you didn't get prompted to view this video, just go on eBay right now and see how much this book is worth, man, and how much it costs. You missed out, because there are a bunch of copies available for $60, but I'm thinking that they're not there anymore.
This is a fantastic book, Ed. I kind of picked this up randomly. I'm not sure. I think it came out in the late 90s, early 2000s. And, of course, I knew Batman Animated. You know, we're going to see some awesome art as we go through this. But the big revelation for me was Chip Kidd. He's done a lot of comics work over the years. This is one of the early projects. And you can kind of see one of the exciting things that he does right here on the cover. He photographs art. He photographs comics. And it was something that I don't know who else was doing that. You know, Like that's who I associate with it, where you're seeing textures of paper, you're seeing, you know, markers and pencil strokes very clearly. It was just an awesome way to look at art. And he ends up doing several books that sort of get into this kind of like, let's look at comics through the lens of a camera. And it's a slightly different way to appreciate this comic art. But in the case of Batman Animated, what a rich subject.
Quick Chip Kidd story that you and I both share. When we went to the Billy Ireland Museum in Columbus, Ohio, a huge comic art archive. I think they bolster something like 250,000 pieces of original art. So many comic strips, underground, pretty good Steve Bissett, John Tottlebin, 2-page spread in the mix and everything. So I forget exactly why we were there. We were checking out the new digs. This is the first time I saw the new digs. And just lo and behold, Chip Kidd pops in, right? Everybody's too shy around him and shit. Is that Chip Kidd? But, you know, had no problem going up to him. Chip, what the heck? Out of this 250,000 stack of archives of original art, what are you trying to check out, man? Because you get the privilege access. Like, you still got to wear the Mickey Mouse gloves when you go, and you know, you're a known quantity there. They'll pull whatever you want. They'll put it on the cart. They'll hook you up. You don't got to do the one piece at a time gimmick like the little OSU students, right? So he's got that privilege access because he's Chip motherfucking Kid. So I'm like, dude, what are you trying to see? And he says, and I quote, I don't know, weird Batman stuff.
Very famous for his Batman love and for his Batman collection. So probably at the time, kind of a dream project for him to get to access to all of this great art And of course, Bruce Timm, the star of this show, and who we see here on the cover. I always think about Batman Animated. It was such a paradigm shift. You know, like I can remember lots of people talking about it as, you know, this is the best Batman ever. It's hard to even remember pre-Batman Animated because it kind of rewrote how we look at Batman. That animated style became ubiquitous with multiple cartoons kind of stemming from this style, comic books spinning off from this style. It was just such a, almost the equivalent and maybe even a higher profile than whenever Miller does Dark Knight Returns and suddenly Batman's grim and gritty and return to his roots. Batman Animated really sort of sent shockwaves through, I think, the way Batman was depicted in all of this media.
Absolutely. I mean, this book, where I would see it most often would be kind of like on end caps and window displays of like of the Warner Brothers store.
Yeah.
So it certainly transcended the direct market comic shop. Off the bat, look at that, man, drawing through the figure. Just these solid, solid drawings, man. Drawing through the figure so that, like, just the artist knows they're not faking anything here.
It's so simple, too. You would think that this is fakery, as simple as some of these shapes are. But as we go through the book and you see more examples, they're perfect.
It fits the Art Deco motif of, like, the backgrounds, this kind of thing. You could imagine this in, like, bronze, you know, at Rockefeller Center or something.
I also love these. We're going to see a lot of, like, blown-up close-ups. And it's where you get into, like, shapes and negative space and all of these little elements that Alex Toth, I think, would be happy with some of these things.
Both of these pieces right here, and you could just start flipping if you want. I could tell the story while you flip. Kind of highlight something. If you watch the documentaries about the animated series when it was brand new, there was like an FCC regulation for how much black was it allowed to appear on the screen. I think it would mess up your, it would shoot off too many weird gases or something like that. Like too few that would destroy your TV or something. There was an issue. And it's because what they were doing was doing like, what would you call it, like a reductive thing? Where they're using like black velvet, black paper, and then applying white media or paint media on top of the black so that the black is the base. And they just had to switch some things up.
There's your Art Deco.
Oh, it's all over the place. I mean, the Batmobile is Art Deco.
I think it's really cool to see like an early Bruce Timm study of your Batman head, and then you get to see sort of what we recognize as the Batman Animated, because it's pretty simple, it's pretty different, and yet it's still like there are some steps to go between this and what we're going to think of as that refined Batman Animated look.
You show off your Street Angels at the beginning, right? And you draw her 1,000 times. I bet you have a codified Street Angel drawing, right? And I think that when you're an animator, man, fuck, you're drawing 24 things a second or something. You're going to figure out how to simplify that Batman figure and make it look cool.
By the way, I had Jeff Smith one time ask me about my Street Angel style, especially the image stuff, you know, that is much more simplified and kind of a different direction. It comes from this. It comes from me seeing examples of this really well-drawn but simple style and just admiring it and thinking, like, there's such a, I don't know, it's almost like a Zen poetry or something, because there's nothing extra in this kind of style, and I really admire that. Everything's there that you need to understand what's happening, what the character's doing, mood, all of those things, but nothing extra.
Big expressive eyes.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's huge. I think that's important.
Gonna call out Jeff Spear's name. That's the photographer for this book, and that is a frequent collaborator of Chip Kidd on these various comic book projects that he does, especially with the photography stuff. You know, I think we looked at the art of Charles Schulz that was a Chip Kidd book. Same thing, Jeff Spear's photographer on that, where he got access to Charles Schulz's workspace and got to photograph all of that. Again, I think that photography piece is really different. We're so used to scanning artwork, which is a good thing for reproduction, but doesn't necessarily capture the feeling of the art the way a photo does.
Here's a trivia question, Jimmy. Like, what is animated here? Because you can see the cell.
Yeah.
What is animated
here? I bet you it's his cape.
It's just
fluttering.
It's just the cape, and then as the thunder and lightning clash, there will be a black cell put on top of him.
It's so cool. That kind of stuff. Again, so simple, and it's so dramatic and effective if you're watching it.
Yeah.
Really great. I love all of these things. Storyboards. We're going to see a lot of storyboards, a lot of character designs. You can see the quick sketches that, again, read absolutely perfectly.
And it's not just Bruce Timm, by the way, man. We're going to see Kevin Nolan. We're going to see Mike Mignola. We're going to see Darwin Cook.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who grace these pages. Part of the fun of this kind of book. Fun to see everybody's, like, what they put in for their portrait. All the different people who work on the show. Well, not all of them, but many of the big players of the show. Always love seeing, like, this kind of thing, people's workspace. Bruce Timm's desk here in this case.
That's so fun. There's almost a space to draw.
Yeah, really. It's in the tiniest little space. And I've seen a lot of artists whose workspace kind of looks like this.
Go to Ralph Bakshi's Instagram channel right this very minute. He's been on fire with painting stuff. Is that Corto Maltese?
I don't know. Could be. Wouldn't be surprising if it is.
Yeah. And like, what the
There's
fuck
your Paul Dini by Bruce Timm.
Coincidentally. Like fixatives and stuff? Like, what the heck do you use all that stuff for?
Yeah, there's all these mugs, too, and I bet you most of them are things that have paint and solvents and who knows what. I wouldn't drink out of any of the mugs you find in this picture.
You know what this stuff is the equivalent of, like, when you see a picture of The Who in a music studio, in a recording booth, and there's those boards with all the knobs?
Yes.
I bet they don't use them shits. And so much of this stuff was probably... He last used that stuff on Masters of the Universe cartoons.
That's hilarious. Kirby Galactus taped to the wall.
Oh, yes.
Very fun. You see some reference stuff. You mentioned the Fleischer Brothers, Ed, before we started recording. You see some reference to that. Alex Toth reference. So talking about some of the things that you know, go into making this show and who these guys are looking at and thinking about and why.
Yeah, on I think it's the Alex Toth documentary. Bruce Timm is on there and talks about how you can't really use Toth stuff for animation in as elegant a way as he would have liked. But you can see foundational stuff here that just becomes more jagged and tubular or whatever to create the Batman. I mean, that's basically what the Fleischer stuff is, just more tubular version. But you could see the Batman, Bruce Timm, in here a little bit.
Yeah, I think so, too. Some of the figure shape is very similar.
The big barrel chest, that Bruno Sammartino chest.
Logo preparation. It's such a cool resource.
It's gorgeous.
I love this, too, whenever they're blowing up things like storyboards and stuff. It makes for a very dramatic, you know, blow that up. That was another one that I would associate again. Chip Kidd didn't invent the close-up, but it's so dramatic. It works so well with this kind of graphic imagery.
Shouts to the background artists, man, because like these little airbrush things are just magnificent to look at.
I saw a zine. You know, lots of cartoonists we know, they work in animation, and so I had a friend who was doing background art and did a zine of like all the background drawings, minus figures and stuff. It was one of the coolest zines ever. Because, like, they all suggest a story. It might be a house that's, like, crashed into by a car, but the car's not there.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. And they're all compelling. They all feel like they're part of a story.
When you see the backgrounds, I think that's what, you know, the art term liminal space. I think that's what you're looking at. If it feels a little wrong because your brain is associated.
Yeah.
Like, there should be people here. Shouts to the person who made the fucking title card.
How great is
cartoon,
that, right?
Huh?
It's so cool. And this is your double gatefold to get all of these in, but... It's so cool to see all of these, you know, Saul Bass. You think of all the great title card artists and things throughout history.
Can you go back real quick?
And it's like Saul Bass comes to mind. Totally different styles here, but it's fun to think of those problem solving.
Staccato Western font right there. The same used on the NWA Straight Outta Compton album cover.
Good call.
Very, look at this, guys. Papyrus.
Yeah. You know, this is early days, like
very
early days of digital, you know, everything being digital and having all these fonts just at hand.
I think they start to solidify more into like the Art Deco kind of typography. But it is funny when you could spot, papyrus or...
Yeah, it is. These are all those like early mid-90 fonts that you would see if you whenever you join up with Photoshop or any of the online desktop publishing stuff, you'd start to see these fonts. Much much smaller font libraries in the early 90s than there are now. These are testimonials by various people talking about kind of the impact of the Batman animated series, how dramatic it was, why it worked well. People like Neil Gaiman, Mark Evanier, Howard Chaykin, Mark Hamill, you know, lots of people weighing in on this because, again, I think it's hard to stress, depending on your age. It's almost pre and post Batman animated. Like, it really did send shockwaves through comics.
Absolutely. And just as a kid, like, being there to receive this stuff, animation was really, really pretty weak at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, it was all, like, you know, I subscribed to all the action figure stuff, Thundercats, G.I. Joe, where you have these human figures, and you have to animate those guys. And, you know, the airplane hangars full of Mongolians or whoever who animated these stuff, they didn't quite do that great a job on that shit, man. So whenever these guys kind of create a new roadmap, it just it's incredible.
I wanted to point these out. These are your sketches, background sketches. You mentioned the great background artist. These are sketches, and they're done color pencil on black paper. Very similar to what you were talking about earlier, where they're painting on the black backgrounds, even doing their sketches that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very defined look and approach. This is awesome. So the opening sequence, this is the storyboards of the opening sequence of the Batman animated series, and you can follow down through. These go across several pages. We'll keep checking them out. I love this stuff. I'm so impressed by it.
We have a lot of animators on the channel. Like, when we talk about certain things, almost all the time, if we're talking about a show, somebody pops up and said, oh, I did backgrounds on that episode, or I worked on that show. Somebody's mentioned, I think it might have even been Rufus Dayglow, mentioned that these scenes like this, there's an apparatus. I would have loved to have seen the original. There's an apparatus that can move an image like one frame at a time for the camera pans and stuff. So there's no telling how gigantic this piece right here is. And sometimes there would be pieces that are like some weird French curve shape of paper or something.
Yeah.
And you're like, what the F is that? But when it's shot, it makes sense.
I've seen those I saw them in a Looney Tunes thing, but it's a weird bent perspective for like panning up a building.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't make any sense whenever you see it like this, but it totally works. Always reminds me of like the Greek columns where they're not perfectly straight. There's like a built-in perspective thing to trick your eye.
Right.
It's so advanced. I can't totally understand it, but it's neat whenever you see it actually work and then pulled out like Wizard of Oz style. Like, let's see behind the curtain on that.
Another one of these, I'm just thinking about that opening piece, man. Another one of these genius pieces where they just kind of build, like, this would be an airbrushed image, static, and then it's the lights that are moving,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that you could get the coolest looking Batmobile and not have to redraw it 1,000 times.
I did the silhouette zine. There's some great silhouettes throughout all of this sequence, too. Between the shadows and the silhouettes, you mentioned that how much black is in this show. That was some brilliant stuff. And even with the cars, you know, it's just like lights that give you that movement. So much black is used here. So much emphasis on shape.
Another one of those things where they just airbrush this perfect face and it's all black here and the animated cells are just the whites of the eyes.
Some of this stuff with the simplest shapes you could imagine for a gun. For a guy pulling a gun.
Totally reads.
Yes, it does. Totally reads and not busy at all.
Uh-uh.
Even when pieces are flying around.
There's...
Like the stuff where he's dodging punches.
There's the term picture making and how, like, you know, picture making can be a lifelong pursuit of the artist. And these are nice pictures.
There's your flashing lightning.
Love it, man.
It's really cool, too, to see, like, we had seen the panel earlier of this image, and now you get to see it in the storyboard. You get that a lot throughout this book of, like, here's the character design, here's a sketch, here's the storyboard, and then here's, like, the finished panel. That stuff's always really great. Info on on the audio, essentially, voice acting and music.
Yeah, that main voice actor dude, he's revered by the fans. Kevin something or other.
How about this for your study on the backgrounds and what it looks like?
I mean, that's a piece of fine art.
It's amazing. You can even see like the daubs of paint where it's like thicker paint strokes and stuff. And I bet you he did like 20 of these one morning. Like,
sure.
we need some of these sketches for a meeting. When you cut to this, though, look at the amount of detail that is there. Like, somebody figures out the perspectives to be able to make this camera move through the sequence and have it all make sense.
That shit looks like Mike Mignola, Gotham by Gaslight era, P. Craig Russell, Inc. artwork.
It's really neat. It says, you know, choreographs a rooftop chase. It's cool to think of choreographing an animation because besides characters and their movement, it's also the camera is a piece of that choreography. Like, well, where's the camera as this goes across building rooftops and down into alleys?
The logistics as a fly on the wall have to be fascinating as someone, you know, executive producer or something has to be a nightmare because you look at that rooftop chase and then you have to like, okay, well, there will be, you know, 10 backgrounds being painted just for this 12 seconds. Is that financially cost effective or not? Like, a lot of back end stuff.
Yeah, I wonder with like all these cityscapes if that was something that they're reusing a lot of. If you look, like, it seems like this is a continuation, right? Like, from here, you know, you can see like where it matches up and it's the exact same thing. So, I'm surprised that they didn't actually stretch that across two pages just to have like, because that's what it would be. It would be a very wide pan. And I guess in animation, you know, you could pan part of it for one sequence. Pan a different section for another place so it doesn't look like you're repeating. I'm sure they figured out how to reuse as much of this stuff as possible. I like seeing this where it's like black and white and, you know, some pencil sketch, but then this is translating it into the painted version and it looks great both ways. Like, I feel like we often say that about different artists that we look at where if it works in black and white, it'll work in color.
Yeah.
You know, if you make it work in your sketch, it'll work in the finished piece. All these layers just really add up. And again, you know, from sketch to like the painted actual piece.
Whenever dudes are doing their sketches on like these textured Canson papers, I'm always like, you're such a show off. It's very intimidating.
It looks really good. Some of it looks like there's a little bit of white media spread on here. Like maybe they're cutting that out with some kind of white out or acrylic or something.
Look at the wild perspectives. I mean, it is almost like Looney Tunes kind of, you know, iconographic sidewalks and stuff.
I think of that all the time whenever I don't want to rule out a grid perspective. And it's like, this is so much more interesting than probably almost any realistic perspective that you would take time to labor over.
Yeah.
That's a funny shape for a pan. I'm sure that's to, you know, the camera's going to follow that shape, but what a funny, funny drawing. You can see it down here. Incredible, weird, you know, like fisheye kind of perspectives on these things.
And I can imagine them using that Akira one-haired brush for these like little girder pieces.
Yeah. Somebody spent some time on that detail.
Or not, man. Those animators are assassins when it comes to getting things done.
They are. They are for sure. But whenever you see like a two-page spread, you know, and it's blown up in very crisp detail like this, it's hard not to admire that level of detail.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. It makes me wonder, like, are we masking things off with artist tape there to get those perfect window shapes? Like, what are the shortcuts, man? Because it really doesn't look like there are any there.
All right, starting to get into some of the design elements, you know, Batman costume, lighting on the Batman, the postures. The postures are so good in Batman Animated. That's one of those unsung pieces, because if you just design the costume and the figure, it can look a certain way, but there's more to it. It's the movement part.
Yeah. Yeah, and these things, like, they're distilled down to get you all that you need, man.
How great are these for very simple pencil drawings? A few lines just to delineate shape and form. Just not a lot of detail, but
just beautiful gestures, yeah. You know? You could almost picture the action line going down the middle.
Pretty inventive Batcave as well. Thinking up all the iconic Batman elements, like these vehicles.
We gotta make toys, Jimmy.
This reminds me so much of Mazzucchelli's Batman Year One.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm sure they were looking at all that.
You would be thrilled to have this
really
at KB Toy Stores.
Really impressive. I always loved his Batmobile, too.
You know something? I have no idea. But when you see those kinds of vehicles and stuff, you just imagine it. That's what they take to Warner Brothers. Like, and look, there could be toys.
Oh, yeah.
Can you buy 5 more episodes?
No doubt about it. Robin's Evolution.
Yeah, Robin didn't
show up.
Look
how simple that is for a sketch.
Whenever they started the commercials and stuff, you would see Robin, but he didn't show up in episodes for a long time.
And Robin's car. Speaking of toys, you're gonna see a lot of those as we go through.
You really start to understand the beauty of the animators and stuff whenever you see, you know, some freelancer doing their little ad art or whatever for this. You know, just dead.
Yeah.
Dead
not,
piece
not
of
the
art.
Same. I had a bunch of McDonald's did Happy Meals with Batman animated toys, mm-hmm. and I actually still have them, but they look exactly like this.
Oh,
like,
nice.
They're so spot on, the models.
Good Alfred. That's the Alfred I think about.
It's a really good Alfred.
You know, it's not Michael Caine.
Storyboards of Alfred.
There they are, dude.
Ed, would you eat one of these?
Those gumball eyes look tasty. But look at this one. This one's a little disturbing, even.
Yeah, it's very disturbing.
Because it's like his brain, you know? And then your lips are going to be touching this right here.
That's great. That's a passable color for a brain.
And then you got to push his dick tips for it to, like, twist in your mouth.
It's like that Punisher toy with the gun for a cock.
Yeah, yeah. Or the Wolverine water wings where you got to blow them up through his penis tube. Like, what are these guys thinking? Because also, you're pushing the penis, and then I'm sure there's, like, a semi, like, vibratory thing that happens with that thing twisting.
That's amazing. Look at the licenses, though.
Just cash and checks, man. Just cash and checks.
Soap.
Oh, no, this is gum. You remember those WWF
yes.
ice cream cookies or whatever?
I did eat some of those.
Yeah, where it's, like, the image is, like, burnt into the side or something. Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
You will shit blood if you eat Batman SpaghettiOs. This is what will be in the toilet right here, man. And then, hold up, go back. This is, like, Jurassic Park Batman. Like
Batman
in a,
soap.
In a little glycerin, like, sap fucking
yeah.
fossil.
It's hard to believe that you could sell this stuff.
I see it, though, as a parent. Like, listen, you wash yourself, little Jimmy, and then you have a Batman toy after a month.
Yeah, you have kids in there just scrubbing the shit out of themselves to try to get to the Batman toy.
All the dermis is off, man. They look like they got sunburns.
So, this is a Bruce Timm sketch. You know, as we go through, we'll point out some of the different artist hands that we see in these drawings, but lots of Bruce Timm, obviously,
yeah.
the main artist that we're going to see, especially for things like figures. I always think he's interesting because look at the weight of the lines. You know, they're not animation lines, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of neat. You know, he's not precious about it, it doesn't look like. Well, I probably drew 1,000 of those.
Yeah, I mean, this is a quick one. He does tighten up a whole lot. Mm-hmm. But man, think about, like, this dude built a wing on, he built another water tower, man, at the Warner Brothers lot.
Yeah, no doubt
about it. With his contributions. That Paul Dini guy, too, man, like, he believes in this shit. Like, he was on Kevin Smith's Fat Man on Batman, like, doing, like, a 3-hour conversation with Batman. They're talking about that one episode, that Mr. Freeze episode, where he's got his wife, like, on ice or whatever, I forget how that goes. And when he's talking about that episode, he starts crying and Kevin Smith starts crying together.
We'll have an episode where we're crying about something one of these days, Ed. It'll probably be a Wolverine comic, but still.
Oh, my goodness.
The title card rough sketch.
Genius.
You know what's amazing through these Jokers is the range of expression that you see in his face. I feel like that's something that, as a cartoonist, you can steal. You know, that much expression. I can't think of any comic book artist at, like, Marvel DC levels that have that range of expression in their characters.
There would be those dudes, like, who's the guy that comes to mind? Is it Kevin Maguire or somebody from
the
Justice League?
Yeah, very known for his facial expressions. It's funny, you hear wrestlers talk about that all the time.
Gotta sell it, man.
Yeah, and I don't see it as much or hear it as much in comics. It's funny, when you say Kevin Maguire, it's like, yeah, that's the guy you hear about. You know, it's because it's rare. You know,
Jaime Hernandez, too.
There aren't too many that are doing it. Yeah, as you get outside of Marvel DC, you'll find some people that have a wider range of expressions, but it's surprising that's not something cartoonists lean on more.
I bet it was
a big skill.
I bet it was a challenge designing a good kind of Joker character, like, persona, because he's such a maniac. He's so scary. If you think about a guy who just, I mean, that's Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, right? Like, you just go out and you find a person, you kill them or something. So how do you sell this to kids? How do you get it to pass the censor boards? Like, that had to be a hard couple conversations.
And of course, Harley Quinn, probably the most successful character to spin out of this universe.
Probably one of the only ones, really.
Yeah.
And that was one of those things where she in my circle, she wasn't accepted off the bat.
Is that right?
They were like, what is this, man? this ain't real Batman. Got a little jester girl.
These are you know, Bruce Timm, of course, made comics along the way. So these are some of the, like, the Mad Love preliminary pencils and roughs. We'll look at that book probably one of these days, but love seeing this kind of, like, I don't know, loose preparatory page layouts.
We took a look at his Batman Black and White story, about an 8-pager, Two-Face story. And it explained his process a little bit in the back, kind of spacing on it a little bit. But if I remember correctly, like, he does an inked version on, like, 8.5 by 11 typing paper, blows it up, and then kind of quickly, with a brush, like, inks over top of it by way of light box. So he tries to keep it precious, tries to keep the energy in there.
Does his own colors on this page, and I guess maybe all of Mad Love, he might also be responsible for coloring.
Super expensive book. It must have been reprinted elsewhere, and that's one of those comics that I've been wanting to read for a long time.
Yeah, there's definitely reprints of that out there. So, like I said, it's one to cover, but it's neat that Bruce Timm does so much in it. You know, like with the color, it's not something you see artists doing a lot.
Nope.
And there you see the licensing of the animated Joker, and I don't know what this actually is.
That looks like a bootleg,
but
man.
You can see that sculpt. And then add Jeff Spears, put some lighting on that whenever you photograph it.
That hair, that really looks like a diarrhea piece.
I was thinking soft serve ice cream until you completely ruined it for me, Ed. Good Commissioner Gordon. Very
stocky, like
big jaw.
A believable human, you know, like you would want your police commissioner to be a big, tough, brawny dude. And he's old, but still brawny. You know, that's another Bruno Sammartino gimmick, or so old wrestler kind of guy.
Yeah, very stocky. The wrestler, that old wrestler build is a good one for a cartoonist.
Bullock
with a badass hat.
Those hats are so hard to
Impossible to draw. Love how simple this Catwoman spread is.
And look at the weight, you know, like great gesture drawing. These are, you know, we did Barry Windsor-Smith's Monsters last week, and he was on an interview with Brian Hibbs, and he talks about it all starts with drawing the figure first. This is the same kind of fetishization of the figure with Bruce Timm. And you go to his Instagram, and he draws what he wants, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's a bunch of naked-ass ladies.
This is neat. They're shadow studies for the Catwoman character, and with some notes about, you know, what he's thinking and why this way or that way works or doesn't work.
I bet a little of it is chilling effect stuff, because, like, if you light it more kind of accurately, you are sort of highlighting the boobs and stuff, and you can't necessarily be doing that.
Also, take advantage of your animation. You know, like, you can do cartoony shadows to basically make her a silhouette, and it's very dramatic. So, like, you're not bound by this. You don't have to be on a film set and be like, all right, how do we actually create this kind of lighting?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a big thing on any cartooning, too, is, like, you're not beholden to the laws of physics. You know, you can do really cool lighting and stuff yourself.
I always like the sort of way they kind of color the outfits and stuff, because it feels like there's a little grain to it, certainly when you watch it on the cathode ray tube, and it makes it feel like a little, like, fuzzy velvet or something. Even the Batman suit doesn't feel quite like spandex from the look. It's like a velvet texture to me.
Yeah, just immediately pre-digital.
Yeah,
is a lot. It's a warmth.
And you know what? Like, when they put the first season or two, it's that beautiful hand animation, and then even that starts to get bought more. They start to have to split their energy amongst the team. We got to start to design a Superman one, and it becomes very spare and almost just another cartoon. But the first couple seasons, absolutely gorgeous. Beautifully animated.
There's your Art Deco once again.
Yeah. What is that technique?
That must
be... Oh, that's the paper.
Yeah, that's what
I was
asking.
You could see the texture in there. But what the fuck kind of paper is that? And what do you use to get that? Once again, man.
Can't answer that.
Once again, man, showing off.
Yeah, that sounds right. Penguin Bruce Timm sketch. I love all of the storyboard sequences that are reproduced.
Mm-hmm.
They're close to comics, but not quite. So here's a Kevin Nolan early developmental sketches for Penguin. So you get to see some Kevin Nolan seeping in here.
I actually forget what Penguin looks like on that cartoon. If it's closer to Danny DeVito or the original Penguin. I don't think it's the original Penguin at all.
Clayface, monstrous.
He was never that cool in the comics, no. But I think they made the cartoon Clayface pretty dope.
Yeah, he's great. He's a monster. Yeah. It's really cool to have that range. You know, think of like Joker, Penguin, Clayface, three completely different physical characters.
And I've never seen a Ra's al Ghul cartoon. So this must be later stuff. And by the way, he is called Ra's al Ghul because Neil Adams says so. So fuck you, Chris Nolan bullshit.
These are pretty great for the, you know, like the equivalent of a black and white comic, but they're adding that gray for your shadow.
Yeah.
Very simple, but pretty effective. In some ways, Ed, this is your equivalent of Red Room, where you're adding your duo shade.
Right.
You know, it's black and white, but you get that extra value mixed in there.
Yeah, always highlighting the focal points.
This is a sequence, so if you're watching it, you know, it's a grenade, lobs the grenade into the pit, and then...
Ka-ka-ka-boom!
Yeah, nice big payoff effect with that fold-out. Love this, the super zoom-in.
Unmistakable Bruce Timm hand lettering. I want some of this paper.
Yeah, it looks really neat.
It's like beads.
Yeah, if anybody watching this knows about this stuff... Put a comment in below, because that's not something you see much. Something special there.
Their designs for the characters are great. Like the old Riddler costume, pretty dumb. They really made it savvy.
That's some more Kevin Nolan. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Man-Bat. And of course, he did that Man-Bat comic, you know, a decade or so before this. Mike Mignola's showing up.
I'm about to start crying. It's that episode. There it is.
Kevin Smith, Paul Dini, turn the volume down for these couple pages. Don't want to stir up too much. I think this is like a ballpoint pen, these sketches.
Yeah,
if you look really close, they're very, very loose. But unmistakably Mignola. Early, too. You know, this is him...
Before Titan A.E. or whatever that one cartoon was that he did.
Yeah, even early days of Hellboy. Like, this is him kind of becoming himself, but also unmistakable, and you can see his signature. They were smart to include that. Make sure that's in the picture. Don't crop that out. You see the different drawing styles, too, for these storyboards. That gray marker's gone, so maybe someone else doing these, or a different season. Who knows? And then edits. Just put your post-it note over top. Fix that figure.
Yeah, it looks like with these storyboards that these might be the genesis of the key frames. So they're all so tight compared to like a feature film storyboard that can be more gestural and downright stick figures sometimes.
Whiteout on these, you know, doing revising the drawings on your storyboards. How about this? Bruce Timm marker drawing. This was a commission, but it's neat to see him doing markers and not a holding line.
That's like the stuff that he does on his Instagram. Right.
I think there's a couple of book collections of those that you can get, you know, pretty widely available.
That Killer Croc has to be a Kevin Nolan design, right? Like, look at that thing.
It does look like it, yeah. Bane the wrestler.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just 100% a lucha mask.
Yeah, I mean, that's a championship belt. Santo.
This would be another character that would have been an original, I guess, that Phantom.
Phantasm.
Phantasm, right.
Yeah.
This was a theatrical release. Do you remember this?
I do, man. And after it, like, so it was in the theater, then it got its VHS tape, and I remember, you know how at the end of... when you were in school, when it's like almost Christmas break or Easter break or something, you get that day that's a flyer. And we had a flyer day and was able to watch Mask of the Phantasm instead of, you know, learning correct grammar.
Yeah, that's pretty good. We would always get like Never Ending Story. I swear they showed that in my school, I don't know, 8 times or something.
Well, it's Never Ending, Jim.
Yeah, I guess so.
I saw that in elementary school.
I would always see the same section because it'd be like, you know, a 30-minute class or something.
Right.
There's always the same piece of that.
When I saw Never Ending Story in elementary school for those same reasons, I remember like being perplexed and a little nervous that we were never going to do anything but watch this movie because it will never end. And then there were credits, and I felt messed up about that. But then I think there were sequels, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so then it's like, wow, it truly is never ending. I love this, like, sort of pink on blue motif right here.
Look how simple these are. I would read a comic that looked like this.
It's all about composition.
That's really pushing that simplicity to near its limit.
Yeah.
Like, the turnarounds, too, are really great. And this is getting into your later, you know, as they start rolling this stuff out, franchising this form, this style.
Yeah, now they got to get, you know, B-listers to animate this shit.
It's so streamlined. That angular part that you mentioned in the beginning with the space ghost and how, you know, that's what this moves toward is like more and more angle simplification. And like, you can really see it in this version of these characters.
It's fascinating because it's probably the same amount of lines, but it doesn't have the warmth of the Bruce Timm art. It's wild, right? Like, yeah. To think about that. The choice of that could really send an artist down an OCD spiral. So have some self-care out there, fellow artists.
This is also like, you can miss this by like a tiny bit, and it's a horrible drawing.
Totally.
As soon as you're off by a little bit, and there's nothing there to like, you know, crosshatch, hide behind, put muscles on muscles. Like, there's no way to cover that up if you're off by a little bit. And that's what would happen, is people would sort of imitate this style but not have the chops to do it.
Absolutely.
And it just wouldn't work.
Yeah, they couldn't see the forms that make up the character.
I always like this, where you have like the same composition, but it's, you know, like experiment with color, experiment with where the shadows are gonna fall. Saw that in the Steve Rude sketchbook, where he would do like color studies for covers. You know, the composition's not changing, but the playing around with the different colors. And
whenever they started to shift up the villains and kind of change their look, you know, Scarecrow changes and Joker changes. That's
a nuts Joker.
I don't like that as much as the first one.
I think it is less warm. I think you're right about that.
You know, like, look, I don't care. I don't like this Catwoman as much as the other one. Big ass head.
Yeah, ears. Tim Burton likes it more, though. How about that one? The killer croc. Yeah, it's weird to see, like, that next generation of all these character drawings. I like some of them, but, you know, if you're comparing them to the first round, it's a different thing.
I always thought that the second round of Bane was a Kevin Nolan, too.
He looks... I like him. I like a lot of these designs and the first ones. I think the Catwoman's probably the strangest one. It's definitely a little bit of an oddball. And I like that Batman. Reminds me of, like, the Batman Year One Batman.
Well, the original reminded me of that, too. Oh, yeah, the Batman Adventures, that's what it was called. See, this is, like, I'm way out of it at this point. I've never seen the Creeper.
How weird is it to think of, like, a Ditko character in this universe?
We gotta put Man-Bat number one under the microscope and see Ditko's interpretation of Batman, which is something you've really never seen before. Always cloaked in shadow, always lit in a way so you never see even the whites of the eyeballs.
This is fun whenever they're doing like references to classic artists. So yeah. Dick Sprang Batman animated.
I love it, man. I love these too. Like, I call those upside down eyes, because you always think to like make the flat part at the top, but when you do it this way, it creates an innocence.
And then, of course, the Frank Miller Dark Knight Batmans.
Yeah.
This was always a big deal, you know, them doing the Dark Knight Returns version of this.
Jimmy, are we getting into Darwin Cook territory?
We are indeed, yeah. Yeah, this is Darwin Cook, the cockpit in the Batmobile from Dark Knight Returns. Yeah, cool to think of the artists that passed through this institution.
Right.
But young Darwin Cook, like Darwin Cook before he's really making comics.
Yeah.
Formative years for a Darwin Cook. Look at how blocky the Batman model is. It's just, like, square.
That's that Frank Miller, you know, middle-aged Batman, man. Big block. That's square nuts. Dude with square fingers.
Square everything. Square ass.
But such great blades, man. Like, those are hard to place for me.
I always think it's a real nod to the artist that they're referencing, that it works whenever you put it through this kind of stripping down and almost like caricature of that artist's style. But right. whenever it works, it's like testament to the original.
Batman Beyond.
Did you do anything with Batman Beyond? Is that something
That's after my time.
I was thinking there was more Batman Beyond in here, but there isn't.
This book came out, like, I think in the 90s, like, when Batman Beyond was, like, really fresh.
Yeah, it's probably just starting up whenever this came out. I think this is 98, maybe. So right around that time, I think, is when it's launching.
Yeah, it says it right there. Well, no, that's for the artwork piece. Never mind.
So there's your Batman animated. Even their portraits are fun.
That really does look like Paul Dini.
That's not a bad Chip kid.
I don't know.
I always associate him. If you get the round glasses, if he ever changed his glasses shape, he could be the Clark Kent. He could walk right past me with square glasses, and I wouldn't know it.
You know what it is, man? You would never catch Chip Kidd dead wearing just a T-shirt.
That's probably true.
Very smart dresser.
I think you're right about that.
He's a design guy.
So that's Batman Animated. One of the cooler books that I've seen of these like side project art book kind of things. And the other piece that I always think about with this is combination of image and text,
yes.
because it's so full of that. It's not a comic in any sense, but the ingredients are the same. And it's interesting to see like how he's composing these pages where there might be a dozen images and captions and then Paul Dini's text. It's kind of a cool design problem. Pretty fun to go through just from that standpoint.
It's a cool book. You know, Paul Dini likes comics. Chip Kidd likes comics. These are people who have careers outside of the game. And they're very successful people, very talented people. When you get something like this with their energies combined, it's a cool art object, man.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's not more widely available because I know there's a huge following for all of this, for the book, for the animated series, for all the artists that are involved in this. This feels like it could be almost a perennial.
There has never been sort of less publication circulation now than there has, like, since the 1800s or something. If you see a book and you think you want it, you better get it, because you cannot take for granted that it'll always be available.
Yeah, very strange how that works. I'm always shocked by the books that go out of print and skyrocket in price, and it's like impossible to predict.
Right.
It really is. So Batman Animated, very cool to finally pull this one down and look. This is one that, like, when friends visit, often gets pulled off the shelf to get flipped through. It's a popular book on my bookshelf.
Makes perfect sense. What do you say, Jimmy?
That's it.
All right, kayfabers, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the bell. We'll notify you when new vids are available. What you got out there, man?
I have patreon.com/JimRugg, where you can see how I make my comics. Really, my Patreon is a lot like this, because I'm showing scraps of stuff, original art, behind the scenes things, sketches, all the stuff that goes into the comics that I make. You can find all that and a lot more at my Patreon. You can also download a lot of my out-of-print zines and mini-comics, which are basically impossible to find otherwise. So join me on patreon.com/JimRugg for all of that.
Red Room issue number one is going to be coming out mid-May, or has come out in mid-May 2021, depending on when you are listening or watching this YouTube video. It's going to be a monthly comic coming out reliably every 4 weeks or so. And you could pre-order those comics in my link tree in the description below. Go to the Fantagraphics website. You can do so there. You could read the comics ahead of time on my Patreon, patreon.com/EdPiskor.
You can subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video to keep up with everything we have happening this year. And what a busy year for Cartoonist Kayfabe.
Not going to stop.
You can also find Cartoonist Kayfabe t-shirts and merchandise at the links below this video.
Jimmy, I think we should give them one more set of marching orders and get the show on the road.
Read more comics.